Chapter 26. Sean really noticed him for the first time when they stopped to water the horses. They had left Chelmford's column the previous noon to scout towards the northeast. It was a tiny patrol, four mounted white men and half a dozen Nongai, the local native troops from Natal. He took the reins from Sean's hands. "I will hold your horse while you drink." His voice had a resonance to it, and Sean's interest quickened. He looked at the man's face and liked it immediately. The whites of the eyes had no yellow in them, and the nose was more Arabic than negroid. His colour was dark amber, and his skin shone with oil. Sean nodded. "There is no word in the Zulu language for thank you, just as there are no words for I am sorry." Sean knelt beside the stream and drank. The water tasted sweet, for he was thirsty. When he stood again, there were damp patches on his knees and water dripping from his chin. He looked at the man who was holding his horse. He wore only a small kilt of civet cattails. No rattles, nor cloak, no headdress. His shield was black rawhide, and he carried two short stabbing spears. "How are you called?" Sean asked, noticing the breadth of the man's chest and the way his belly muscles stood out like the static ripples on a windswept beach. "Mbijani, rhinoceros." "For your horn?" The man chuckled with delight, his masculine vanity tickled. "How are you called, Nkosi?" "Sean Courtney." Mbijani's lips formed the name silently, and then he shook his head. "It's a difficult name." He never said Sean's name, not once, in all the years that were to follow. "Mount up," called Steph Erasmus. "Let's get moving." They swung up onto the horses, gathered the reins, and loosened the rifles and the scabbards. The Nongai, who had been stretching out, resting on the bank, stood up. "Come on," said Steph. He splashed through the stream. His horse gathered itself and bounded up the far bank, and they followed him. They moved in line abreast across the grassland, sitting loose and relaxed in their saddles, the horses tripling smoothly. At Sean's right stirrup ran the big Zulu, his long extended stride easily pacing Sean's horse. Once in a while Sean dropped his eyes from the horizon and looked down at Mbijani. It was a strangely comforting feeling to have him there. They camped that night in a shallow valley of grass. There were no cooking fires. They ate biltong for supper, the black strips of dried salt meat, and washed it down with cold water. "We are wasting our time. There hasn't been a sign of Zulu in 2 days' riding," grumbled Bester Klein, one of the troopers. "I say we should turn back and rejoin the column. We're getting further and further away from the centre of things. We're going to miss the fun when it starts." Steph Erasmus wrapped his blanket more closely about his shoulders. The night's first chill was on them. "Fun, is it?" He spat expertly into the darkness. "Let them have the fun, if we find the cattle." "Don't you mind missing the fighting? Look you, I've hunted bushmen in the Karoo and the Kalahari. I fought Zihosas and Fingos along the Fish River. I went into the mountains after Mershesh and his Basutos. Matabili, Zulu, Bechuana, I've had fun with all of them. Now 400 or 500 head of prime cattle will be payment enough for any fun we miss." Steph lay back and adjusted his saddle behind his head. "Anyway, What makes you think there won't be guards on the herds when we find them? You'll get your fun, I promise you. How do you know they've got the cattle up there? Insisted Sean. There, there, said Steph. And we'll find them. He turned his head towards Sean. You got the first watch. Keep your eyes open. He tilted his top hat forward over his face, groped with his right hand to make sure his rifle lay beside him, and then spoke from under the hat. Good night. The others settled down into their blankets, fully dressed, boots on, guns at hand. Sean moved out into the darkness to check the Nongai pickets. There was no moon, but the stars were fat and close to earth. They lit the land so that the four grazing horses were dark blobs against the pale grass. Sean circled the camp and found two of his sentries awake and attentive. He had posted Mbijani on the north side, and now he went there. 50 yards in front of him, he picked up the shape of the small bush besides which he had left Mbijani. Suddenly Sean smiled and sank down onto his hands and knees. He cradled his rifle across the crooks of his elbows and began his stalk. Moving flat along the ground silently, slowly he closed in on the bush. 10 paces from it he stopped and lifted his head, careful to keep the movement inchingly slow. He stared, trying to find the shape of the Zulu among the scraggy branches and bunches of leaves. The point of a stabbing spear pricked him below the ear, in the soft of his neck behind the jawbone. Sean froze, but his eyes rolled sideways, and in the starlight he saw Mbijani kneeling over him, holding the spear. "Does the Nkosi seek me?" asked Mbijani solemnly, but there was laughter deep down in his voice. Sean sat up and rubbed the place where the spear had stung him. "Only a night ape sees in the dark," Sean protested, "and only a fresh-caught catfish flops on its belly," chuckled Mbijani. "You're a Zulu," Sean stated, recognizing the arrogance, although he had known immediately from the man's face and body that he was not one of the bastard Natal tribes who spoke the Zulu language, but were no more Zulu than a tabby cat is a leopard. "Of Chaka's blood," agreed Mbijani, reverence in his voice as he said the old king's name. "And now you carry the spear against Setiwe, your king."
"My king?"
The laughter was gone from Mbijani's voice. "My king," he repeated scornfully. There was silence, and Sean waited. Out in the darkness, a jackal barked twice, and one of the horses whickered softly.
"There was another who should have been king, but he died with a sharpened stick thrust up into the secret opening of his body, until it pierced his gut and touched his heart. That man was my father," said Mbijani.
He stood up and went back into the shelter of the bush, and Sean followed him. They squatted side by side, silent but watchful. The jackal cried again up above the camp, and Mbijani's head turned towards the sound.
"Some jackals have 2 legs, he whispered thoughtfully. Sean felt the tingle along his forearms. "Zulus?" he asked.
Mbijani shrugged, a small movement in the darkness.
"Even if it is, they will not come for us in the night. In the dawn, yes, but never in the night."
Mbijani shifted the spear in his lap.
"The old one with the tall hat and grey beard understands this. Years have made him wise. That's why he sleeps so sweetly now, but mounts up and moves in the darkness before each dawn."
Sean relaxed slightly. He glanced sideways at Emberjani. The old one thinks that some of the herds are hidden near here. Years have made him wise, repeated Emberjani. Tomorrow we will find the land more broken. There are hills and thick thorn bush. The cattle will be hidden among them. Do you think we'll find them? Cattle are difficult to hide from a man who knows where to look. Will there be many guards with the herds? I hope so, answered Emberjani, his voice a purr. His hand crept to the shaft of his assegai and caressed it. I hope there will be very many. You would kill your own people, your brothers, your cousins? Asked Sean. I would kill them as they killed my father. Emberjani's voice was savage now. They are not my people. I have no people. I have no brothers. I have nothing. Silence settled between them again, but slowly the ugliness of Emberjani's mood evaporated, and in its place came a sense of companionship. Each of them felt comforted by the other's presence. They sat on into the night.